Wondroff, staff, and guests. The lobby is open. Recording has begun.
Thanks, Justin. We'll convene the Liquor and Cannabis Board Executive Management Team meeting for Wednesday, June 22nd, 2022. Our first item today is a report from Jim Weatherly, our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Chair Postman, members Garrett and member Ball and Drop. This is my first EMT meeting and I'm still learning the protocol here. So I appreciate the time and the opportunity. I've been here, as you know, with the LCB for just a little over 8 months, and it's been a fascinating ride. Everybody's been very receptive and warm in terms of the onboarding, and we've been busy. Obviously, there's a lot of work to do here. So I apologize if there's pieces of this that you've maybe heard before, or if you have any additional questions, I'm mindful of the time as well. And so some of the things that we've been working on, or that I've been working on in this role, is we've talked a little bit about the previous diversity survey responses that we've done internally, reviewed those and prep for future endeavors around kind of measuring what that looks like here at the LCB. In addition to that, in terms of our human relations, HR side of it, Anita and her team have had me looking at hiring questions, what our recruitment demographics look like. In addition to, as we've done hiring in these times, almost everybody, if not every division, has been represented in kind of reaching out and wanting to look at our diversity-related questions, the types of things in terms of how we score also, and our selection process. So that's been an interesting development also from a workforce development side. There have been numerous occasions where our staff and leadership has asked me to come to their meetings, unit meetings, retreats, to talk about diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and I'm very open and receptive to that. And then in addition to this role, I also serve as a non-voting member with our internal diversity council. And there is not enough time to brag about the individuals, my colleagues, that have already been laying out the framework and the wisdom of that group thus far. And we've been busy. There has been some restructuring of sorts with the governor's newly established Office of Equity. So while we still want to sort of have this love letter to the past in terms of cultural events and things that we have done internally and externally, we are taking those metrics and those measures very seriously. And so there's a bit of restructuring that's also happening internally with our Diversity Council, which I think we're very excited about. That council, if I could brag additionally for a few minutes here, you know, we work very closely with the state's business resource groups, and we have great representation of those BRGs, myself included. I'm an active and founding member of RAIN. We also have Build well represented in the Diversity Council. Devon, who is in our HR team, is actually just stepped up as a co-chair for their professional development committee, which has been helpful again to the hiring practices. Jasmine, that's one of our newly promoted liquor licensing supervisors, is very, very active in terms of interagency of state women. We've got a lot of activities that are happening there. And I think as a council, we are going to continue to build and maintain those relationships with our BRG partners for future programming that we would also like to do as a council moving forward, kind of again, paying homage to what we've done internally, but looking for different and additional educational opportunities for our staff and the community at large. We had a retreat just last month as a Diversity Council where we really dove into our own strategic plan, again, parallel to what's happening with the Office of Equity, but also looking at our own LCB strategic plan. You know, my first month here last October, we were just starting that. So it was a nice opportunity for me to kind of see and hear from our leadership how we structure, how we build that. And it's been nice to be able to parallel what we're doing there within the Diversity Council and looking for places that we can do that work together. And this group has been really good about bringing what's happening at the divisional level back so that we can continue to kind of tease those things out also. The other thing I would say is, again, back to this Office of Equity, it's not lost on us, this new pair planning, this pro-equity, anti-racism playbook. And I'm very excited about the team that we're building here with Rick at the helm as our state agency leader. I think we are sitting currently at 12 members, and I'm very excited that Member Ballendrop has joined us as well. So I believe at this point, even with a conversation I had about 20 minutes before this call, I think we now have representation from every division also within our agency. So that's a good building block piece of this. There are still, pardon me, some additional sides of this that we are working on. That is a requirement of the Office of Equity to both have community stakeholders and our tribal liaison represented. So we meet this Friday to again talk about plans for those onboarding endeavors to get additional members in-house for how we do this work together. And I think it's important too to talk about the Office of Equity's EIR with this PAIR plan. It's yet another acronym, and I apologize for that. That's the Equity Impact Review. And that's an internal only document that we are responsible for at the LCB and frankly, every state agency to sort of address the sections of that. And I think it's going to be extremely vital to have this representation from our agency and certainly the community at large to help answer that document. And that is due internally to us by August 1st. So that's a huge thing that's on my plate right now, and we're all very aware of it. So I'm looking forward to picking up a bit more traction this summer as we work towards that. Otherwise, we've been doing, from a diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging standpoint, we have now built, as you may know, an internal or intranet DEIB site that is accessible to our staff. We are working with our communications team almost on a weekly basis, and Brian's team is tremendous in general. All of our teams are, but this is a communication team, having come from DSHS, needs extra gold stars because this is a team that's ready to play in terms of these efforts. So I think from us as a group, you're going to see more messaging, more communications planning, not only internally with our staff, but we would like to start doing some of that at the community at large. And I know Member Garrett and I talked a little bit about that last week too, and I'm excited to get over to the Seattle area and spend some time with you and kind of just think about, you know, as an agency at large, where from an outreach perspective that you all would like to see me and where you would like me to go, because I'm very open to that. I'm very excited about that. And then otherwise, just thinking about our strategic plan and the updates and how that's a living document, where we can nest, again, this important work around DEI and belonging within it, I think is going to be huge. And we're up for the challenge. We as this diversity council, I know this board, and certainly Rick as a support leader for me as well. So those are my updates at this point. I wanted to pause and just see if there were any questions of you, if that's even acceptable at this meeting.
It absolutely is. This is a meeting of Q and A's. So any questions or comments from the board?
I have several comments. Ollie, do you want to go ahead? Do you have any comments?
No, I was, now that I can unmute, I was just going to acknowledge the great job that Jim is doing and has done so far. And the conversations we've had has been great. Yeah.
Great. Good.
And I'll just echo that, Jim. I think your enthusiasm and the commitment that you have to your role and working with each of the sections within the division has been great. I'm super excited to see how we look at the strategic plan and how we embed diversity, equity, and inclusion into that. I am really impressed with the work of the internal diversity council. I think that it's been amazing to see the communications that have come out and the breadth of different topics that are covered. So just really excited about that. I'm really looking forward to working with you guys in the PAIR team as well. And so I'll just conclude in the spirit of the month of June to acknowledge Juneteenth and Pride Month, and thank you guys for the work that you've done to get the word out on so many opportunities for us to celebrate the diversity both internally and within our community.
No, I appreciate that, and thank you. Thank you for those comments, and you kind of stole what I was going to say there at the end as well. Absolutely.
Sorry about that, Jim.
No. We can't say it enough. I'm very excited that it is Pride Month, and I just wanted to acknowledge again Juneteenth. And, you know, being over in Olympia, you know, SQUIM is home for me. It was really important to come over last week and be a part of the events that were happening there at the Capitol. And so there was a group of us from the LCB that came over for the day. And I think that's really important to acknowledge. Would I have liked to have seen more people there? Absolutely, from our agency, but it's a start. And I think everybody that was there, we felt it was important to do so. So I felt more educated after it, and more motivated, way more than I think I did when I came for the original 2017 Pride flag raising with our same governor also. So we do have some work to do, but I walked away from that event literally ear to ear smiling with colleagues thinking, okay, we're going the right direction here.
That's amazing. I talked to Becky, who mentioned that it was a great event, and I look forward to participating in the future. So I'm glad that we had good representation.
We did.
Jim, I got one quick question for you, and then we're going to have Rick join for just a second. But on the equity impact reviews, what's your role going to be in that? Are you going to see, touch, review each one of those that staff is doing, or?
I think that's the initial plan. Again, Rick is kind of our point person here, and I'm happy to help where I can. We had a good conversation this morning from the IT perspective. So that's going to need to be, my perspective, a shareable document that's going to take this leadership and others to kind of fill in the gaps, because there's a lot, you know, being new to this agency, I would not even begin to know how to start that conversation. And I just am glad that we have the internal option of, this is for our eyes only, by this August date, because I think in the future, the strategic plan that the Office of Equity is going to ask of us is going to maybe mirror this completely, but be close. But there's going to be some interesting conversations with this, and maybe some tense ones. So we're doing a bit of just relationship building in that team of 12 plus right now to kind of figure out how we can go where we need to go next.
Yeah, terrific.
Hey, David, I have one more quick comment, if it's okay.
Yeah, of course.
So, Jim, just, you know, speaking on behalf of the board, I would love for us to consider a place where we can regularly get updates from you about the progress you're making, how things are going. And then finally, if you could think about this question, I'm not looking for an answer today, but I'd really like you to think about, how can the board be supportive? How can we best support your efforts? And to think about that, and do let us know, because I think, you know, from my comments, observations so far, I think that this board is very supportive of your work. So please think about that question.
Absolutely. Yeah. And our council will be, I think, excited to know about this piece around how this we can support one another.
Yeah, and I think this is the right venue for kind of a regular update, and we can certainly have Jim join each time at EMT. And then if there's something we want to deeper dive into, we could certainly have them at a caucus at any time and take some more time. Rick, you want to add something?
Thank you, David. First, like everyone has said, Jim, I wish you could come on video, but I'm out of state. I just want to thank you. I've been so impressed. In 8 months, wow, I was surprised when you said that it has flown by. But just impressed with the way you jumped into the job, and you know, just how, frankly, how inclusive you've been with the agency, with me, with others, with folks outside the agency. It's funny that, you know, board member Vollendorf talked about an update, and what I was going to share was Tony and Anita, our HR director, our deputy director, and I meet with Jim, it feels like every 2 weeks, but you provide an update, and it's just really helpful, of the work that you're doing, of the work that you're going to do, and long-term efforts that we're involved in, you know, and I just think it's really helpful. So when I heard Jim ask about the updates, it's like maybe when we do come in, if you come in once a month, which would be great, and we'll talk about this the next time we meet, but creating a dashboard even that provides that, because there's different levels of work that's being done within the agency, inside and outside the agency. And you talked about that work that you've had with Ollie about stakeholders and communities. And so I just wanted to just, you know, 'cause have the opportunity with the public present and the board members and staff to just say, I've really enjoyed the passion that you put into this work. for us. And I think our employees are grabbing on, Jim, because, you know, you have a very personal approach to this, and it is very personal in general. So I just thank you, David, and the board for giving an opportunity. I just want to really thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you.
I appreciate that, Rick. It's my pleasure. And just know of me, I'm naturally more of a qualitative researcher, but I know that quantitative is part of state service as well. So in the future, I look forward to sort of molding and figuring out what sort of progress reports work well for this group. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick. And Jim, you know, that's, I think, you know, when you were talking about the equity impact reviews, you said, you know, some of those conversations may be tense. You know, there may be some. That to me is a good sign. You know, if you came in and tried to change the, you know, so much, and one of the important things that I think Rick really set this up for success is to say, we wanted you to be able to get into any part of this agency and be a part of it all. It's not just hiring. It's not just what we would think in the past is equity. You know, you're there and you're having those discussions, and I think that's helpful. And frankly, when you and I have a chance to talk a little bit, and when you do, and I hear there's been some little bit of friction or whatever, I think that's a good sign. That means we're having the real conversations, and we're not afraid. You know, staff's not afraid to tell you what, you know, really is on their mind, and you're not afraid to give them the counsel that we brought you in to provide. So I just want to make sure you know that and keep that up. And, you know, we don't want any fisticuffs, but I never want to shy away from kind of real conversations. So good on you for setting the environment that allows that to happen.
Well, I just wanted to say too, and thank you for that. Just, I couldn't do it alone, obviously, and our divisional directors and their leadership and guidance has been absolutely crucial for this. So I look forward to working with them in the future also.
Yeah, great. Okay. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Take care.
Too.
All right, our next update will come from Chandra Brady, the Director of Enforcement and Education, who is in the office.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation to share with you the great work your enforcement education folks are doing. I bring you lots of data, so I'm just going to start running through it, and you can ask questions as you have them, and I'll try to follow up on a couple of questions that you asked the last time also.
Great.
We'll get started by covering complaints. In the month of May, we had 153 of those. So I'm showing you here a breakdown of each of the industries, and you can see how that breaks down between liquor, cannabis, tobacco, and vapor. And then I'd like to look at, you remember I used to look at the percentage of these that were related to COVID. Well, I'm happy to say that we have, we're considering this data post-COVID data, and it looks like on average our number of complaints that are related to public safety, our high priority issues, is 25%. And then as we look a little further into the data, you can see the number of education contacts. And then over on the right, the other tools we have available, which is warnings, notice to corrects, and AVNs. It's just interesting and always good for me. I watch this number when we're looking at the number of education contacts being 10,571 and AVNs being at 395 year to date in all of the industry. That's 3.7 when you start looking at the percentage of how many contacts overall we're having, which is a pretty good place to be. And when we look a little closer at education, you can see the comparison between first and second quarters. And then further, as we break down those education contacts into each industry, you can see year to date how that measures up against what we've done previous years. Again, watching this cannabis number in the center, about how much more present and more active in the field they have been this year in response to some of the things that are going on in that industry. Then we can start looking at licensee education as it relates to just for the month of May in the bright blue in each of the industries, and how much our officers have been out there in the field contacting our licensees, even considering the staffing challenges we're having, which I'll talk more about a little bit later. And then we look specifically at the education topic. So over on the left, you can see the top five topics that we're chatting with folks about, and then broken down by industries. One of the things that's really interesting as we look at these next few slides is you will see that where we use particular tools on which topics is really reflective of what we set out to do, which is provide education and work with people to get in compliance, and then use our enforcement tools when compliance doesn't seem to be the goal, or when we need a little bit more help getting on the path to compliance. So as we start looking at those violations more specifically, you can see that for year-to-date 2022, we've had in liquor and vapor, and then over in cannabis, the black column is the warnings, the dark blue are AVN, and then cannabis has the notice to correct tool available to them as well. When we look specifically at those notice to corrects that were issued in May, you can see that on the issues that we're using notices to help folks get in compliance are the required surveillance system, record keeping requirements, traceability, some of those regulatory issues that we still need to have corrected. Then as we start looking more closely at AVNs for the month of May, what you see is where these are being used, especially exclusively in May, are on those high priority public safety issues. And in this case, serviced to folks under the age of 21 for restricted products. And that is across all industries. And then if you're interested in looking at the number of AVNs by industries, you can see that on the right, 38, 6. And then some different categories, still service to under 21. It just divides up tobacco and vapor over there on the right. And then looking at the topics we're using warnings for, lots in the tobacco industry, you can see that that's a much larger tool there. But you can also see that we're not issuing warnings for service to folks under the age of 21. And then, as you know, we like to resolve things at the lowest level possible as compliance is the goal. And so just a little bit of data here on the liquor and cannabis industries. And you can see that we had zero go straight to formal hearing in the liquor industry in May. They were all involved resolved uncontested or at informal hearing. And then you can see we just had one choose to go straight to formal hearing in May. So lots of good resolution and working with the industry, even in the cases of AVNs here. Now we'll start to look at compliance and youth access. And you can see here we are looking at liquor compliance for the month of May, 82%. And we had 200 checks out there in the field by our enforcement and education staff this month. The pre-COVID number there is 85%. So as you can see, we're just below that, but hopefully we're seeing some climb there happening. At the last presentation, Chair Postman, you asked about comparing these to a national standard. Because there are so many different ways to measure this and the regulations and laws are different in so many states, that wasn't something that I could provide, but so just to follow up on that.
Okay.
Delivery curbside compliance for youth access in May was 64%. This is still a challenge, both for our division and for the industry. I would just say that the industry associations are continuing to work with us and find ways in which they can be proactive in helping to solve this problem. And we're working on some communications tools to provide some educations. These are also much more involved and difficult compliance checks to do for our division too. So you see that these have lower numbers, require more staff, much more time, and much more advanced prep work. So they do have an impact.
Director Brady, can you go back? I just want to look at, what did you say the average for alcohol was? Can you go back one more, not for curbside delivery, but just the liquor compliance youth access?
Pre-COVID?
You said, well, it was 85 pre-COVID?
It was 85 pre-COVID. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then curbside now is, if you can advance one, is 60-something?
64.
64. So, and curbside, that's based on the allowance, right?
Yeah, that's new. That started with the allowance. The other thing that I want to acknowledge for our folks that really like data in the room is that as we have these smaller numbers of checks, those failures really impact the percentage. So,
that's true.
Yeah, so we just need to keep that in mind, but also, you know, we have some work to do here.
Well, we do, and the industry does, yes. And yeah.
I would like to repeat that when I say we, that's a representation of us working with the industry to improve this. I always tell my officers that the numbers of checks we are getting done is our work. Whether the compliance rate is high or low is the industry's work.
And I would just say that if I were in the industry and wonder what would happen when this allowance runs out, they got to get that number better. Even though I appreciate you saying, you know, when you're dealing with only 14 instances here, a few different, you know, makes it swing wildly, but it's not what we're looking for. Room to improve.
I'll just add that, you know, here at the national conference, every state seems to be grappling with this and having challenges.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were many good sessions, but one of the better sessions was on this whole idea of third-party delivery and compliance. And I think myself and other people here came away with some really good ideas and conversations to bring back when we get back.
Oh, great.
Okay, if we look at our cannabis compliance rate, we're back, the industry's back up to 97% there with 21 checks in the month of May. And then finally for tobacco and vapor, I'm sorry, the industry's at 95. We were 97 pre-COVID. That was my mistake. I was reading the wrong numbers. And then for tobacco and vapor, they're at 85%. Pre-COVID, they were at 90 and 92%. I have about 6 to 7 more slides. I've reached my 10 minutes. With your permission, I'll continue or save the
Please.
Rest.
Please, yeah. No, go ahead.
Okay. For premise checks, just reflective of the work that your staff are doing out in the field, well over 3,000 contacts for just doing those, showing up and looking at how folks are doing with compliance. And as you can see up there in the upper right-hand corner, that's reflective of the percentage of licensees that staff visited during that time, the month of May. And this is something we're measuring ID checks and youth access. Oh, back a slide, please. Just to give you an idea of focusing also on a way to be proactive about us being in locations and IDing youthful appearing persons who are also in those locations, instead of just using compliance checks, also doing some ID checks when we're out and about. And here's a little bit of data about what we call our CRI unit, the criminal history records information, and just the numbers of folks they're processing for different areas throughout the agency, for licensing, for cannabis license renewals, and then for some of our background work as well. Telling you a little bit about what our examiners are doing, the top 5 issues, this is exciting for me. So CCRS is still top there, but also we're starting to do some reporting analysis. So this is support to our folks that are in the field and just looking at not only are we entering in what was formerly known as traceability, now CCRS, but how does that compare to what we're actually seeing out in the field? So I'm excited to see that show up as number 2 for their data. When it comes to our FDA team, while they're a separate team by contract, this is just another large body of work that's happening in our state as it relates to tobacco and vapor compliance checks. So as you can see for the second quarter thus far, that's an additional 650 inspections and other contacts with our licensees that we're having in the state. We like to be transparent about the work we're doing and how people feel about it. In the month of May, with the brighter blue, you can see that we received, I'm sorry, in 2022 total, you can see that we received 2 complaints and we resolved 2 of those without having to initiate an investigation. A lot of times with fact finding and just chatting with the staff involved, you are able to figure out if you need to open an investigation or it's pretty quickly resolvable. They were both related to the topic of officer conduct. One was founded and basically counseling and training was performed, and the other was unfounded. Recruiting and hiring, you can see, are a big part of the work we're doing. All over on the right, you can see a list of training. We believe that providing quality training and staying current with the information and training we're providing our officers is an important part of being contributors to this industry in the state. We have 32 vacancies, 12 in background. We've hired one. Hopefully we're about to hire a whole bunch. Our hiring and recruiting team and training teams are doing a ton of work right now, so I'm very appreciative of that. And then finally, I won't read this to you because I know you're all able to read, but I do want to highlight that we have provided 6 of the regional public safety training events with the cannabis retail industry, and 8 of those on-site security assessments have been completed already, and there are more scheduled for our cannabis retail licensees. Otherwise, just lots of partnerships and defining partnerships and what success look like. And then just to let you know, I'll be visiting the Pasco and Tacoma offices and heading up to the academy to have dinner with 2 of our recruits, new hires that are currently at the academy for LCD. And that's all for questions.
Quick one on the safety and security work, both the trainings and the visits. A sense of how that's being received, and is it helpful for people? Have you gotten any feedback?
Yeah, I think that it has been, it was very well used at the beginning. The attendance is kind of starting to taper off now. There are people that are using the security assessments. We still have some pending. They've completed 8, which is a pretty large number for on-site, several hours on-site, several hours. So I'm happy to see the response there. And I think as things have clearly changed for now out in the field a little bit, we might see attendance taper off, and we will just respond accordingly as that happens. But going pretty well. Lots of great questions.
Good. Okay. And just as a reminder to any licensees, it's free. So, it's a great service that we hope helps increase safety and security. So,
The public safety training events are on Wednesdays at 11 o'clock and they're virtual. So you just have to go and register. And then all you have to do is contact the company we've partnered with in order to get a security assessment. So,
great. Okay. Any other questions for Director Brady?
No, but thank you for such a comprehensive update.
Thank you, Board Member Volandra.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate what you've added to. I just think you all are just about as transparent as one could be. And that's one of the things I really like about this place. So thank you for bringing forward those, and we'll make sure we have time to do them each time we meet. So thank you.
Thank you.
And next up is Brian Smith, our Communications Director, for Communications Update.
Good afternoon, Chair Postman, and Board Members Garrett and Bollendorf. Hey, I too am off-site, and Wi-Fi here is a little sketchy, so I'm out of state, part work, part vacation sort of thing, but I'll turn off my video if you let me know along the way if I'm cutting out, because Chandra was cutting out a little bit on me.
But I just want to know if the background there is where you really are, or is that a virtual background? Because wherever
let's just
it is,
say
I
it's a virtual representation of where I really am. Yes, okay. So I'm down in Arizona.
Okay, go ahead, Brian.
So I think I can catch us up. I'll be fairly brief. I'm working from one monitor, so let me bring this up. On the media side of things, it's really slowed down in the last month. I don't have a good reason to account for that, but we are working with, responding to one online publication, a reporter for that has asked a number of questions repeatedly over the last week that I've worked with the enforcement division to be able to respond to deep questions about going into training, guns and things like that. And so that publication has not come out. We released the last information to the reporter yesterday, but that has been ongoing. I just wanted to tip you off and be happy to follow up more with you there if you're interested. But On the media front, it's been a little bit slow for the last 3 weeks for us. You know, that's still probably one a day coming in, but this has been the primary one over the last week to 10 days. I just kind of want to talk a little bit about our communication on the projects. You may or may not know that I'm on the steering committee for both SMP and CCRS. Julie is the lead. Julie Graham is the lead on the SMP work. And has been doing a really good job in that the QA assessment for the last month had us as communication management as being in the green. And so there's a lot going on there that Julie's really been working very hard at, and we're keeping up with it. So, you know, you have the outside sort of review of everything that you're doing, and to be in the green is a very positive thing. Mm-hmm. We have some more communications that will be coming out, including a monthly newsletter for staff that will be coming out on SMP starting in July. So as this project ramps up, and I'm sure you're gonna hear more about it from Tony, know that we are on that, and we'll be working towards what we need to do to make sure staff and stakeholders are up to speed. On the CCRS project, we're in phase two, as you've heard Jim Morgan talk about at previous EMTs. And this is sort of where we are focused on fulfilling some of the requests that came in initially from the industry. We have a communication expectation that's going to be going out here in the next few weeks to the industry and explaining some changes that are going to be ahead. Former examiner Kendra Hodgson, we had a CCRS meeting this morning, was sort of described as the face of that project because she has such a deep knowledge of our systems and lab integration and working with integrators. And so with her having moved on to a new position outside of the agency, that will be an increased sort of challenge, I think, to be able to speak that language as we communicate some of the technicalities to those specific groups, such as labs and integrators, over that phase of the project. And then really just kind of lastly, we have a lot that's coming up in the current month, I think. Sam is doing something new. She's new, as you know, in her career in the communications field, but I'm always trying to grow her. She's just doing a great job. She's up at Camp Murray for the yesterday and today to go through the emergency management training for public information officers, which is a big step forward for her. Something I've always encouraged my team to be a part of, and including myself and every communications consultant prior to Sam, has spent time up at Camp Murray working through emergency management types of things. And so this will be valuable not only to what she'll be learning for the state, but also for our agency going forward. And that is myself, I think, the main thing. And as you heard from Jim and others, we have a lot planned as far as outreach that'll be connected to social equity with PAIR. And Justin and I are tied together on the strategic plan about developing action plans and implementing them for outreach, which will be on these topics and others as we go forward. But hopefully that brief thing brought us up and with some value there. Is there any questions?
Absolute value. Thank you. Any questions? None from Nope. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. We will see you soon. Next up is a general agency update with our Deputy Director, Tony Hood.
Good afternoon, Chair Postman, members Wallendorf and Garrett. Thank you for having me here today. I'm going to start by talking about Jessica Dang's work. She is our Policy and Performance Manager. And I just wanted to have the slide brought up, if we could, which shows a little bit about what she does regarding our policies. This is just an example of one of the important parts of her work. As you know, she wears many, many hats. This is a list of some of our current policies that have to be reviewed, and there's quite a list. This is just a list of things that are in the works. She has a small team, which is composed of members of several different divisions. And they each take assignments of policies that need to be reviewed and updated. And she showed me this the other day, and I thought I would show it to you to just get an idea. A lot of these policies are HR, but not all of them. There's a lot of IT and other ones. And I'm just really excited that the team is so organized and diligent at this, because this can be somewhat overwhelming and not terribly exciting sometimes. You know, you are updating WACs, you're updating RCWs, you might be updating terms that are no longer used. But it's important that we have current policies, and this is one of the things that she does. You can take the slide down now. That's pretty much the whole purpose of that one. Thank you, Dustin. She's also doing a dashboard, which maybe I can show in sometime in the next few months, a simple dashboard, but something that will help us with our projects that shows us where we're at on some of the high-level projects. It's something that we've talked about at management team. We have a very simple bar chart right now, but she's putting together a dashboard that I think will be helpful, and I will share it with you as soon as it's ready. Regarding SMP, we've had several milestones since I've presented. We signed our Laserfish contract last week. Laserfish is what's going to replace Oracle. And so we were very, very excited to get that contract signed. I want to give kudos to the IT team who went back to the table and negotiated very specific details, which was very important because we need to hold them accountable for every step of the way. There have been problems before with some contractors where we weren't able to hold them accountable because our expectations were not specific enough. And in this case, they did a great job. They kept pushing it and making sure that we got what we needed in the contract. So I'm very thankful for all of their hard work. Today, we had a retrospective meeting where we talked about what we did well during that contract negotiation, what didn't go well, and how we can improve. We will soon be doing this with the Salesforce integrator. It's a much bigger contract. It's much more complex. And so we need to take the lessons learned from Laserfish and apply them to the future. On that note, we received several bids from our RFP last week, and we have a scoring team. Yes, we're working on our big, I have paper, don't tell me, well, I just told you all I have paper I shouldn't have. But, you know, I have three binders that are this big each, because with that type of work, I just like to have paper and make notes. But most of the team did not print things out. But we are busy working on scoring those, and we'll have a long meeting on Friday where we get any technical questions answered that we might have, and then we'll move to the next phase.
Great.
We had a great steering committee meeting last week.
Tony, I'm sorry, yes. This is Ali. On the scoring and the scoring team, is the team our only internal folks?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
So this is, we are scoring their proposals to us on this very technical work that we're hiring them to do. And so we have very specific rules we have to follow regarding scoring. There's a lot of confidentiality involved with what comes in. So it's just an internal process.
Okay.
After we're done, then it's more of a public process in the sense that people can ask for feedback, they can ask for our notes, and then we're transparent once we're done with the process. So regarding our steering committee meeting, we had a great meeting where Erica Anderson, who's our new consultant from the OCIO, came. We were happy to have her. We were able to report milestones to her. We also mentioned at that meeting that, as you may already know from emails, the OCIO did put us in active status, which was great. We had five conditions that we had to meet before they would put us back into active status. And so they did that this month, and we're very happy. We have amended our investment plan and our technology budget per their requests and resubmitted those. So we're getting close to getting that gate released, which is the first chunk of money that we need. We are already planning for the next gate because they're going to come quickly. Once we get through that first one, the next one's going to come quickly. So we already have a plan. The good thing is for the next gate, we do amendments to the existing work that we already did. So it should go quicker, because then we amend and we show where we're at, and then hopefully get the next gate of money released to us. We interviewed several project managers last week, and we chose our top candidate, and Matt Hansen has done reference checks on that top candidate and is in the process of trying to negotiate with the firm that represents her so we can get her on board, hopefully in July. We also interviewed a number of people for our AA4 position, which will do administrative support, extremely important administrative support. They actually act as a librarian to make sure that we are documenting everything we're doing and keeping good records for the project. So hopefully we will choose a candidate next week. Again, reference checks are being done. We also hired three AA3s to do data cleanup. Data cleanup is part of what has to be done before the Laserfish project can be completed. So really busy interviewing and trying to get lots of people on board. Speaking of, I just have two other notes. Speaking of vacancies or Binance actually has filled almost all of their vacancies. So I just wanted to say that that was some good news we got recently. They intentionally didn't fill one of their auditor positions because of the training schedule. So really, they're pretty much full as far as I can tell. All right. That was great. IT hired two new business analysts to help with operational work, which is very helpful because our IT is stretched over to the projects like CCRS and SMP. And so if we can backfill for the daily operational work, that really helps us. We received version 20 of the roadmap to recovery guide for state agencies, which is what the state has done for COVID for 2 years, I believe now. I think we just hit the 2-year anniversary. Who knew we were gonna have 20 versions of this plan? It's kind of crazy. It only changed a little bit this time. It has to do with people who are working outside, who are contractors that aren't vaccinated. And it doesn't really affect us because we don't really have contractors outside, but they gave us some nice details on how to properly deal with those people. And the last thing I just want to mention is that COVID is still affecting us at LCB. You know, we have people, of course, who are working from home, but we still have people getting COVID. And it just kind of dawned on me today that although they are safely working from home, it is affecting them. You know, people are tired. People are taking sick leave. It is still wearing on us. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to be patient and recognize that that's in addition to the other things that might happen outside of work in people's lives. That's still affecting us and affecting our workload. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it. And in fact, that's why we've gone through 20 of those plans, because this thing doesn't go away. It keeps going. I got tested about an hour ago, so I'm waiting to see, because I feel like I've gotten it.
You know, I did that this morning. I was so tired the last 3 days, and it was fine, but you just don't know.
Yeah, well, I either have the flu or COVID, but I did the home test as I should. And like I said, I'm working from home now to make sure. But
it could be allergy sinus. I probably should get tested because I just said it's allergy sinus, but I'm going to get tested for sure.
I totally understand. Yeah.
And it just adds to the sort of anxiety of whatever it is you get. I mean, you know, getting the flu is no fun. But now, is it the flu or is it COVID? And so, yeah, I'm glad you said that. And people, you know, our folks should make sure they're taking the sick leave they need, even though they're working from home.
Yeah.
Don't spend too much time working. You gotta rest and recover. And
absolutely.
SMP question. Sorry, I missed the last steering committee, but on when you talk about the gates and, you know, sort of which is just sort of when we get our next tranche of money for the next piece, are we able to sequence that in a way so the next one opens before we complete everything in the current one? Or do we have to our proof there is finishing phase one, or not phase one, but
we don't have to be finished with a phase. We have to show our progress. Okay. And then we just have to explain what we've spent the money on and right. our progress and why we need the next gate. So that's why we can plan ahead right. for that.
Okay. And it should be sort of seamless in that way. We don't have to sit and wait for that next one, next injection of funds, hopefully.
Yeah, this
right?
is, yeah, this okay. is yes. fingers crossed.
Okay.
Or at my last meeting, we decided we needed a fingers crossed emoji. We were talking about SMP. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it does seem like it's gone well. I'm glad that the OCIO is sort of supportive of this. You know, we're going forward. Not that they weren't, but yeah, we're getting what we need, it seems like. So that's great news. Any other questions for Tony?
Tony, I'd just like to acknowledge your work and leadership in working on this particular project. I happened to had a conversation with Jenny McShane yesterday, who acknowledged your leadership in bringing this forward. So I wanted to just pass that along in the spirit of passing on positive comments. But also thank you for sending me a copy of the RFP so I could fully understand the scope and the complexity of this particular project. The final session today was states talking about modernizing their systems.
Oh,
and
really?
There were states who have been working on this for a decade. So I think that we are not outliers. It's very complicated, it sounds like. And I've seen that based on the RFP and the work that you're doing. So just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate
Thank
that
you.
Update. I messed up. I skipped over Justin Nordhorn. Was supposed to be right for this. Sorry, he's Director of Policy and External Affairs. Justin, my apologies. I'm just glad you stuck around and didn't just shoot out the door when you saw that I had skipped
well, I thought
you,
about
so.
It, but you know.
No. Yeah. No, we can always find you, but go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Chair Postman, members Garrett and Wallendorf. Got a few things that we've had going on last month that I can provide some updates on. There's a lot, obviously, in development, but the first thing I want to do is just acknowledge my team for the deliberative dialogue. So we had two last year and then three more this year in the last 2 months that on the THC compound issue, especially surrounding the concept of impairing and those types of things. And we had three very diverse panels. Kathy spent a lot of time trying to get the appropriate panel members, a diverse group of perspectives that we can take back. And now we're going to digest all that information. But it couldn't have been done without the other team members working behind the scenes, making sure that folks could engage and participate online. So truly a team effort from them. And this was our last deliberative dialogue on the topic. So that's closing this particular portion out. Now we'll be going through the information and trying to see how we want to approach moving our proposals forward. So, but just really excellent job by our team and want to thank them for that. The other things that we've been having going on is a lot of listening, if you will, in the last couple of weeks. So we've attended a number of different conference areas. This is certainly that time of year. We had the external CANRA conference that was held in Seattle. We had national attendance from stakeholders. So that was pretty exciting to be able to listen to them. And that was really the regulators across the nation just listening to some of the, approaches and impacts from either the federal government or some of the other industry folks. And so two of the topics I wanted to highlight that I thought was really interesting. First, it was a social equity panel. And, the points that were made by the entire group, I think there were six people on that panel, were just phenomenal. It was really a good national perspective from a variety of states. We've been able to take some of that back and have some discussions around, folks are working and what might be more challenging and those types of things. And then the other panel that I would highlight had to do with standards. And so they brought forward, I think it was four panelists from different organizations that deal with standardized approaches and could be weights and measures and all of those types of things. So these are you know, internationally recognized standard organizations that work together collaboratively to come out with some of the national standards on different products. And there's too many products to really cover. But it was very interesting listening to how they approach the work, how they collaborate and you know, bring their expertise to bear. And I think that that will be something that the industry will be able to consider as we move forward. You know, as we you have more and more states come on board, people are going to be looking at, okay, how do we standardize this? Because across the nation, especially around lab issues, there's not real strong standards at this point in time. And I think people are seeking, you know, how do we get some standardization, you know, among the states in those particular areas. And so that was a very interesting dialogue as well. And then coming down to the internal area, from the, all the CANRA member states were able to meet. Again, you know, it was a lot of learning from one another, what is going well, what's not going well, what are the challenges. And then the new states are always seeking, how is this set up? What are the lessons learned and those types of things? And so, you know, really effective in creating those connections and networking so that, you know, when we move forward, we have those points of reference across the United States to say, hey, we're challenged with this particular issue and you know, what's going on in your state. And of course, the subcommittees that that we have, we're able to report out on some of the work that they do. And so, you know, there's a number of different subcommittees that have done a variety of work across the association. So that was able to be presented. So again, you know, a lot of listening, you know, just sharing lessons learned and information like that in a fairly general sense. And then last week we did attend a industry conference, and that was actually, I thought, fairly effective as well. They did a little bit different, and this was over at WACA where they had a roundtable approach. And I thought that really built an opportunity to connect with a variety of people, answer questions, you know, increase a little transparency, try to build some trust, and have that type of interaction. And so, you know, it wasn't, you know, any type of decision making going on or anything, but it was a good opportunity to be able to, you know, hear from folks. What are the concerns? How do we, you know, think about things moving forward? And that kind of lines up with what I had mentioned before in previous months on some of the outreach efforts that we'd like to do is, especially around the policy shop, how do we create a learning environment where we're listening to a variety of different perspectives in the industry so that we can have those perspectives in mind as we start developing different things in the future? So I thought that was a pretty effective model as well. So we also have had some meetings that have been set up, and Kathy, once again, has taken great initiative on lining things up with legislative staff over this interim period to make sure that we have, you know, an increase in information sharing around some of the potential proposals that we have, because, you know, last year was so fast and furious that, you know, it was hard for anybody to keep up with, okay, what are the changes? What are the challenges? What does this mean in a very technical, you know, landscape? And so we're committed to doing those ongoing information sharing so everybody can be on the same page as we continue to develop these potential issues. So that's something else that we have that continues to move forward. We are having some rule conversations around the THC component as you know, a follow-up to the deliberative dialogues. And so hopefully we'll be able to provide a better update in several weeks or at the next DMT, because again, there's a lot of information to kind of go through and make sure that we're moving in that right direction. I've also been invited to, and I sat on our first meeting yesterday with a social equity task force sub work group, if you will, where they're looking at the concept of what would there be benefits from a social equity aspect of shifting some of the agricultural oversight from LCB into Department of Agriculture. And so that was an interesting conversation. And, you know, we were able to offer, you know, how it got started from the beginning and pose questions just to say, you know, have folks considered A, B, and C? Because there's a lot of, I think, pros and cons to the concept. And, you know, trying to be neutral, we were just raising the questions that people really need to be considering and thinking about prior to recommendations going back to the larger task force. I think it's a fairly complex issue, and there's really not an easy solution to come and bring to the table. So there may be a number of more work. We only have two meetings scheduled, so I'm hoping that there will be something further on that.
Justin, quick question on that. My recollection from post 502 was that our State Department of Ag wasn't really looking to get into the cannabis business. Has that changed? Have they expressed interest or willingness to regulate?
Well, I don't know about the full on regulation, but what I would say is, you know, early on when we were given 502, you know, so why did we take it on? Because we were called out in the initiative. I mean, it wasn't something that the LCB sought out. It was here you go. And so nobody else was assigned any role or responsibility in there. And because of the number of state agencies that receive federal funding for a lot of programs, yeah, there was a lot of reluctance to get involved as one of the first states in the nation and potentially, you know, compromising or sacrificing or putting at risk those federal funds. And so I think that's where that hesitation came from. If we look over the years, we've had a number of different engagements with the Department of Agriculture that have been more proactive, mm-hmm, whether it be the lab and some of the randomized testing issues, corresponding and connecting with the hemp program. And so, you know, there's a number of things that I think can be looked at. But of course, you know, if you stand up a new program, it's potentially really expensive because they don't have the current staffing to be able to do that. And so that's, I think, something to consider on, you know, what would that be for licensing fees and those types of things. So it's really hard to tell at this particular point, but I thought I'd let you know that we are engaging in that particular conversation as well. Okay, and then I think the CDM update. That's what I wanted to give you on the House Bill 1480 study that is dealing with the allowances. So just as a quick overview of the recent activity, so they're breaking this down into quantitative and qualitative data. And so right now they're taking the quantitative data, and in June and July they're going to be breaking that down and cleaning up the data. So we won't know much about what they're fully looking at until probably the end of July. But that's where they're at. They've collected a number of data points from a full spectrum of different locations, and now they're cleaning that up and crunching it down. On the qualitative data side, we have stakeholder interviews that are going to be starting this week, and those are the stakeholder industry type of engagements that that CDM is putting on. And then in July, they're going to be doing the recruitment for licensee focus groups. And so they're starting with the industry interviews, and then they go into the licensee focus group interviews in July. So again, there'll probably be a number of pieces of information coming out late July into August on kind of where things are at right now. And then we're also going to probably see in July an updated demo of what the dashboard may look like. And of course, until we get more data, it's hard to plug in all those types of things. But from a conceptual standpoint, we are doing a lot of check-ins around that. And so that is what I have currently on the CDM update. So I'm happy to answer any questions for anyone.
Are they looking at compliance rates for delivery and curbside?
Yeah, we've actually shared some because I don't think that there's not, you know, as you heard Director Brady mention, I don't think nationally there's a single point of reference for any of that type of information. All states collect it a little different. Some states approach those things a little bit differently on, you know, who they use as far as investigative aids, what type of approach they allow, and those types of things. So it's not all apples to apples, if you will. So what we did is when we get some information, I know Mary has brought forward some from the public health side, and we share that with the research group. We've also shared our internal compliance data with the research group. And then if we see other compliance data from other states, we're happy to share that with the research group as well. So they're getting, you know, pieces of information in addition to, you know, what they're pulling on their own. So we're trying to give them, you know, things to consider, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, good. Other questions or comments on policy? Justin? Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry again for skipping over you. We'll get you next time. Mm-hmm. Where we're supposed to. Appreciate all the work your team is doing. And Rick Garza is going to.
Yeah, I just wanted to add the question on compliance checks. And Jim had shared two panels that we heard yesterday or Tuesday afternoon with respect to curbside delivery. And you saw the graph that Chandra provided of how low the compliance rate is. I think that's pretty common in many of the states. They're struggling with this because it was an allowance that happened quickly, as we all know, and there wasn't a whole lot of enforcement going on because, of course, we were in COVID. So it was difficult even to do compliance. So once we began to do compliance, we saw what we saw. And I think two of the takeaways that I had, and Jim and others were there, and I know our licensing staff and enforcement were listening intently to that discussion, was Texas ABC has come up with a best practice that most of the folks there think is pretty good. And then, as you know, Justin, as a former president of NLEA, John Yeomans was there, and NLEA has created a video training component for delivery. And it has a lot more to do with those third party providers that is really causing a lot of the problem. It's not necessarily the employees of the restaurants, though I think there is non-compliance there too. It's really these delivery mechanisms that are being used, Instacart, you know, Dash, whoever it is. Everybody across the country is struggling with this issue. So I think there was some really good information that we picked up that we can bring back and will bring back. But I appreciate too, Justin, that you took the time to talk about the meetings that we had, Canra had, and some of the things that came out of that. And just yesterday, I was part of a panel, the intersection of cannabis and alcohol, where we talked about, and your example about standards not being there for the cannabis industry really lies because we have the federal prohibition. So those companies that we heard from in Seattle have been around for years and years and years, whether it's weights and measurements, but they've created national standards that industries use. And they were talking about how that we need to do that in the cannabis industry. But because of the lack of research, because of the lack of the science around cannabis, you can see that you're seeing a hodgepodge of states creating standards that are not uniform. And we're struggling with that ourselves, with the labs and with the rest of it. So again, just some really good information that we got from Canra when they met. We had 33 states present in Olympia for those 2 days, which is remarkable, even given that we're, you know, in this COVID, but really good meetings. And, you know, for the staff that was involved, folks like Justin and the committee work that was done there, just kudos to our staff for being part of that. And then just want to thank everyone, the division directors. Chandra, you always do such a great job with the dashboard and providing information to us of enforcement. But the takeaway today was looking at that non-compliance, you know, around delivery and curbside, and then saying, wow, we just went to a meeting where they were talking nationally about the problem that exists there. So that gives us an opportunity to look at what these other states are doing and try to find a best practice that we could initiate. We were even talking about, should we create a permit or a license for these third-party deliverers? Because we don't have that today. It's a cumbersome process for our licensing division to look at these contracts that these licensees have with these vendors to make sure that it's being done properly. So there's got to be, in discussions with licensing staff that was there, there's got to be an easier way for us to do that. So that's all I would add. Thank you, David.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate that. Okay. Got a moment here for any final thoughts or questions from the board? Nothing from Ollie, Jim, anything? No? Okay.
I'm sorry, David. I do have one question, and it goes back to Justin, and I should have asked it then. The deliberative dialogues, I'm wondering, are those recorded or are they?
Yeah.
Okay, so I can go back and see. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have not had a chance to listen to yesterday's, but I talked to a few staff members who were there, obviously, and it sounded really good. So
yeah,
I look forward to hearing. Yeah. Some of that. Okay, well, thanks everybody for the reports, and everybody helped get the meeting online too. And we will adjourn the executive management team meeting for June 22nd. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.